Let's Take This Outside with Marianne Iveson, the podcast where she speaks to athletes, outdoor professionals, and scientists about why they connect with nature.
Kevin Callan is the author of 18 books, including the best-selling The Happy Camper and his incredibly popular series of paddling guides. He's a notable public speaker and frequent guest on radio and TV. Kevin is also a regular contributor, blogger, and columnist for Explorer Magazine and Paddling Magazine, and has won several national magazine awards. He was made patron paddler for Paddle Canada and has recently won several filmmaking awards. Kevin was listed one of the top 100 modern-day explorers by the Canadian Geographical Society. Please welcome Kevin Callan. Kevin, welcome to Let's Take This Outside. We did this.
How you doing? I love this show. This is fantastic.
I feel like we have a lot of crossover and a lot in common, so this is going to be really fun, I think.
Yeah. I know some people you know, and you know some people I know. And you interviewed Adam Schultz a couple times, didn't you?
That's on my list of questions to ask you. So can we go back to that later?
Sure. Yeah.
He crosses over a lot of genres, but outdoors for sure, and just one of the coolest, nicest guys. I saw one of your whiskey chats, which was really cool.
There was a certain point where I was doing so many whiskey chats. It was actually water. Not water. It was tea with ice in my whiskey. I was doing so many. The companies were mailing me bottles of whiskey for the whiskey chat. It was hell.
Oh, I'm sure it was so terrible for you. I'm sure it was just the worst. Where is your home? I was trying to figure it out through your videos. I was trying to be, okay, that sounded super creepy. But where are you located?
I live in British North now. I've moved here about 8 years ago. I'm originally from Milton, Ontario, which was a farm community at the time, which is not a farm community now. And then I moved to Peterborough. Over 30 years, I moved there. And then, 8 years ago, I moved here. And my daughter and I, now she's off to university. I live on what's called a hill, but was really kind of cool is when I got here, 2 days into it, my daughter goes, "There's some First Nations people out near the lawn, Dad." I went, "Oh." I went out and I knew them. They're elders from Curve Lake. And I went, she's, "What are you doing here?" "Well, we're doing a smudge, welcoming you to the area. And because your laneway is actually the old portage out of Chemung Lake." I went, "What? I actually live in a portage? I mean, every time I get the mail, I'm portaging? That's just wrong."
That is meant to be, Kevin. That is meant to be for you. So you're close to Peterborough, and I've said on this podcast many times that, so my parents are in Southern Ontario. I grew up in a small, farming town as well. But if there was anywhere else I would live in Ontario, it would be the Peterborough area. I have some family there. And it checks a lot of the boxes when it comes to the outdoors and nature. How does it feel for you?
It does. I'm glad I'm out of the city. I'm not knocking Peterborough. So everybody out there, I'm not knocking Peterborough.
Well, Peterborough is a city. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, but there's no way I'd be living downtown anymore. I'm so glad because I literally live 10 to 15 minutes north and nobody locks anything here. Like it's a very small town and yet you're so close to a very large, city like area. And but the region is really nice. The Kawartha Highlands is amazing. Lots of paddling. In fact, I can go to the Kawartha Highlands on a canoe trip 20 minutes from my house. Or I can go to Algonquin, which is only like an hour and a half away. Or I can go to Tomogamy. Or it's sort of like a spider web. You have so many places to go. So, yeah.
I would say it's central and southern Ontario, is it not?
Yeah, I would say it's nothing like what Milton is now. Like, I would never go back to Milton. I mean, I guess the mayor was upset when I said that on radio one day. I would never go back to that town. Because when I went there was lots of woodlots. There was lots of hiking trails. There was lots of trout fishing. A young kid roaming the woods in a small town, and now it's just part of Toronto. So things change, right? So
where else do you love in Ontario that you're like, ooh, I would definitely move there? Do you like the Ottawa area? Like, I know Ottawa is the city, but there's a lot of, there's a lot of great paddling here. I'm sure you know that.
I love Ottawa. I really do. The city itself is a really, it's a city meant for me, a very artsy city. Lots of paddling as well. My partner, Christine, she lives in Kingston, and I've got to know that area quite well the last 5 years. And so I can't say we're dating anymore because it's like 5 years now. You don't have to, but it's proper to say I'm my partner.
Are we getting into a relationship part of how to label things?
Very, very detailed stuff. No, but what's really interesting? Here's a good thing to talk about. When you get used to a certain region and a certain environment, like I like the Kawarthas because of the fishing and the hills and the shrub bush, whatever. But I used to always like Haliburton because the blue lakes, the pine. And then I went to the Kawarthas. I was like, but then I really liked it. And now looking at the Frontenac biosphere, it's a totally different area. You've got sort of a mixture of everything, all tossed like a tossed salad. And the only thing is there's ticks everywhere, but other than that, but Ottawa Valley has got so many great things that just last year I did the Mississippi River, which actually starts at the Bonnacle Provincial Park, and I paddled to the Ottawa River, and that really did show the transition. Like there's so many different environments I paddled through.
Where did your love of nature begin? Was it on the farm in Milton that you hate now?
It was my dad. My dad took me fishing. Like he would take me out of school early, which is great because I hated school. And we'd go out fishing. And I think the very first time in my journal I wrote, I was 12 years old. We're on this fishing trip. We're at a fishing lodge, Lion Fishing Lodge. So we took an old Grumman canoe to get into some back lakes for some brook trout. And we caught brook trout. And I wrote my journal that night saying, you know, this vessel, this canoe is made for getting you into the wilderness and catching more brook trout. So I remember years and years ago, I went back to that spot. My dad had passed away, whatever, but I went to that spot and I got I didn't fly in. I actually paddled in. And then I paddled back out of that area and just loved it even more, just with the canoe. The canoe is the greatest vessel because it gets you into places where if you do meet someone, they're just like you. Usually you won't meet someone, but if you do, they've gone through the same nasty portage and the same bugs as you did. I'm not knocking people that use an ATV or a pickup truck to get in. I'm not knocking them at all. I think it's great they're out there, but it's not going to be the same when you get there.
I have to admit that, yes, I have been in kayaks and canoes in my life, but water sports were never something as a kid for me. It's not something I really do now. I just started swimming again. I'm hoping to do some open water this summer. I need someone else to bring me to go canoeing or portaging because the idea of portaging in like Algonquin Park sounds actually kind of amazing to me, but it's also like I don't have a canoe. I don't have a lot of the things that require it, right?
It's one of those things where I tell people all the time, you can try and convince someone to go on a canoe trip, but once you start explaining it, they look at you like, are you crazy? You're going to carry how much on the portage? There's going to be bugs. There might be bears, the bad weather, but you really do have to take them by the ear and take them on the trip. And then at least go for more than 5 days. Don't go one night for your very first time because it's just like, you won't get it. You won't get it. But by day five, you're finally sleeping at night because the bear hasn't killed you yet. Right. So you're like, I'm not worried about the bear anymore because it hasn't killed me yet. And then by day 10, you don't even know it's day 10. You don't count the days after that. I remember my daughter, she was, we paddled across Algonquin Park when she was 8 years old. It took us 12 days. And I remember, I think it was day 8, but she was there with a cutoff blue jeans and t-shirt. And these guys, you know, come up to her in their full military outfit. They weren't in the military, though. They were just dressed like they were in the military.
Okay.
And they look at her and they're like, how long have you been out for, little girl? And Chris goes, I have no idea what day it is. I don't know. And she goes, how long are you out for? She goes, and they're like, we're out. And they had that, like, the big Bowie knife down to past their knee, right? They're that type of person, right? Well, we're out here surviving. For 2 nights.
Oh my
God. My 8-year-old daughter goes, yeah, you better get out more.
We're surviving. You're like, that's not.
Yeah, because I thrive out there. I don't survive. The happy camper doesn't survive out there, right? I bring good food, good whiskey, a good chair, you know, that sort of thing. If you try to survive, you will, but then you go on to your next thing, right? Canoe tripping to me, time in wilderness is not the next thing, it's my life.
Hiking's my first love. So I understand, I get the like bugs, I get the connection to nature. I like being in the middle of nowhere, but there's something about portaging that brings you places that hiking actually can't bring you.
Well, portaging to me is actually to me, backpacking is the longest portage ever created as you're carrying your load.
That's
all the time.
Hilarious, actually. Yeah.
I do like backpacking. I take a lot of students on backpacking trips now because it's so difficult now for administration to allow them to go canoeing. It's so frustrating for anybody out there that, you know, teaches any educational program, taking students outdoors. It's like a bubble, right? Oh, things might go wrong. And yet going backpacking, they haven't stopped me yet because, you know, I do remember once though, the one program that the administrator said, okay, we can't go canoeing. Well, I'm going to take them backpacking. Well, you have to prove to us that, you know, you can handle a bear. So I think it was a 5-page report I had to write about how I can handle a bear. During that time, true story, if you go back in time, it was on the news, Global News. It was in Coburg, and this black bear went across the football field of Coburg High School to go to the McDonald's back to get all the food, right? So they saw this. So they shut the entire school down. There was a lockdown. A helicopter hovered over the bear. The OPP shot the bear dead. And it was all on news, right? And of course, I came back and I went to the ministry. I went, can you write me a report to show me how you can handle a bear? And she goes, are you trying to make a point? Yes, I am. Because we had no problems with the bears where we were, but you obviously did.
Because you handled that differently.
Oh, my. And what I was trying to get at is like, it's everywhere you go. You can't put them on a bubble all the time. So,
you know what I find, especially as a woman, and you know, you have a daughter, I find that other people are scarier, specifically men are scarier than animals, right?
Not even that, but if I had to put my journals all together, and when I brought my first aid kit out, I would say 99.9% of the time was human-based error or human-based silliness that actually got us in trouble. It had nothing to do with bad weather, bears, whatever. And endless times were interaction with people. Yeah, you're right. I can handle a bear. I can't handle a stranger that you don't know. Very unpredictable, right?
Yeah, humans are unpredictable. Like, animals are very predictable.
Yeah. Mind you, Dee Whalen, a famous filmmaker, she went across Canada in 6 years, and she was in the wilderness for 6 years. And she said the greatest thing was to meet really nice people out there. Like, there is some positive, right? So,
oh, absolutely. Yes, 100%.
I think what's going on now is someone took note the other day when I was out in the bush. They go, you say hello to every single person you see on the trail. I went, yeah, I do. Well, why do you do that? I went, because you never know when you're going to need someone to help you out there. And you better be nice to them, right?
I'm one of those people too. I smile, whether it's like biking or hiking or whatever. I smile, I wave. I just love it, because when people like have that moment and you're in nature together, it's that connection, right? It's like human, authentic connection.
Yeah. And also the normal people out there, well, none of us are normal, but the people that are out there that actually are just like you, you're going to get along with, right? So, and I always say, like, when you go with people on a canoe trip or whatever, you better like them, especially if you're solo, you better like yourself. So it's not going to be a good trip if you don't. But if you don't like them, well, you'll find out really quite quickly if you don't like them, because you are who you are out there. There's no facade. I love that about wilderness tripping. You can't fake your character. You think back in high school, you always faked your character because you had to, right? Well, I don't know if you did, but I did. Like, you know, I was a shy kid and whatever. But when you're in the woods, you can't fake that. If you don't like your boss, take him on a canoe trip in Algonquin in May and let the bugs eat them alive, and just you'll laugh at it. It's like, great.
You did mention that you teach, but did you have a quote like real job before like creating content? And like, it sounds like you're also teaching right now too. So what's like the evolution of, you know, working to creating content? Cause I know what, like, I see what you do, and that is a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, here's the simple answer. My mother always wants to know when I'm going to get a real job. And I just turned 60. Right. So I actually wrote a memoir a year ago talking about that, how every single job I had me outdoors. And the reason why is I was a very anxious kid. Well, I'm still very high anxiety. And what calms me down is being in the woods. So every single job I've had is always being outside, not inside. I just can't stand being inside. So I've worked in fish and wildlife. I worked in forestry. I'm a writer. I worked in film. I work on radio, but also I teach part-time. And I've been a part-time instructor at, I used to work at camps too. I was a guide, but then about 30 years ago, I started teaching at a college part-time, and I always remained part-time, which financially was the stupidest thing I've ever done. But I did that so I can actually still write and go out in the summer and stuff like that. But about halfway through that, I switched my career path. I was teaching environmental issues, ecology and stuff like that. And then I also taught how to identify plants and trees and stuff. But I switched that to actually what's called dual credit. And what it is actually, I teach high school students that aren't doing well in high school, and they take a college program. So it's how to identify species. And if they pass my college class, they finish high school and get out of high school and go into post-secondary. These are students that actually have some issues. We used to call them youth at risk, but we don't call them that anymore. It's just they just have issues. They don't learn in the regular format, right? So I'm in the woods with them all day. And my last semester, the average mark was 97%, which is friggin' awesome. I mean, these guys were either going to jail or going on the street, and they weren't going anywhere. And all of a sudden now they're passing, and then they're going off to somewhere else. So,
speaking of rewarding, you have created some incredible resources for outdoor adventures. Is that rewarding for you to create those? And like, what are some challenges around creating resources and probably having to update them?
Yeah, goods and bads of that. So I basically started writing guidebooks because I wanted to get people out there, because if they're not out there, you can kiss wilderness goodbye. If we don't go and reconnect with it, we won't want to protect it, right? So guidebooks, to me, was a genius way to do that. And I, at that time, back in the day, I hate saying that back in the day because I'm still in my day. But anyway, back when I started the guidebooks, the government at the time, Ministry of Natural Resources, was not maintaining the routes that they were promoting. Yes, there was provincial parks, but there's a lot of cranland routes that they weren't really protecting. And I started writing about them. And they're like, well, you can't do that. I went, catch me if you can. What do you mean I can't do this? Like, well, because I think they had alternative plans for those areas. And that's why they weren't maintaining them. So, for example, the Kawartha Highlands Provincial Park was not a park when I wrote about it. It was Crown land. People just went there. And all of a sudden, they said, well, you can't write about this. I went, well, you actually used to have a pamphlet about the canoe routes here. Well, we don't anymore. I went, it's not my problem. So I wrote it up. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, now there's so many people going to that area. It's now a provincial park. The other side of that coin is that I am labeled by some as a wilderness pornographer. I ruined Kawarthas because they used to go there for free, and now they actually have to pay. So some locals want to kill me, right? I mean, there was a day where I was in the Kawarthas and following this young couple, and they went the wrong way in the portage. And I said, well, I think you should go to the right. And we didn't say, well, because I wrote the bloody book. I know you have to go to the right, but I didn't. So they followed me down there, and some locals were there with a big bonfire. This is 9 a.m, and they're drunk, right? Which is fine. You can do that. That's okay. And they asked the young couple, how'd you get into our lake? Of course, it's not their lake. It's part of a park. And of course, they said, we're following Kevin Callan's book. And I went, oh no. And then the local said, well, join the book burning party. That's what we're doing. They were all my books. They were burning my books in the bonfire. This is a true story. I was walking past my burning of the books and I'm thinking, well, I'm getting at least a lot of royalty right now.
Kevin, this is how you know you made it. Please tell me you know that, right?
Oh yeah, I'm thinking I must be really popular. They're burning my books.
That is wild to me that people are burning guidebooks because they're so mad. But like, clearly that you are helping enough people for them to be upset.
Yeah, and you know, they have a logical point in one sense. They were always on that lake before the crowds came, especially the crowds from Toronto. And no, I didn't introduce myself. I just kept paddling.
You're like, I just can't.
But at the same time, what I'll do is say to people, I went, do you think the Kawartha Highlands was ever going to be the way it was 30 years ago? No, there's so many people in this world. It's 2 hours from Toronto. You need to create a park to protect it. And now, you know, I bet you they're happy that it is a protected area because it would not be the same if it wasn't. At the same time, should we only just have protected places? To me, they're islands in the midst of an ocean of development, right? If you look at biodiversity, how can Algonquin be a diverse ecosystem when the wolves leave the park, you know, they're hunted and killed and they know that. So they stay in the park and then they start having sex with their brothers and sisters. And you know what happens when that happens? But what I'm getting at is that if we're only having a species protected in islands as opposed to, you know, sporadic all over the province or country or whatever. Yeah, it's important that we protect more and more and more. The more people we have, the more development, the more greed, the more money, the more whatever we need to protect. I'm starting to sound like that old naturalist. Well, you know.
No, this is why I wanted to talk to you. It's perfect. This is exactly what I need.
Hi, I'm Steve Yerko.
And I'm Tara Sands. Now available from Maji Media is our new podcast, 4Kids Flashback. 4Kids is the company who brought you the English dub of Pokemon in the late 90s and so many other shows like Yu-Gi-Oh!, Shaman King, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Kirby, the infamous One Piece dub, and so many more.
We'll be talking to the people who worked at 4Kids. Actors, directors, writers, editors, producers, engineers, you get the point. And hopefully get the answers to questions both you and I have about the company.
I actually worked there as a voice actor on some of the shows.
And I was a kid watching the shows and remember way more than Tara does.
And thank God for that. Steve is actually a professional storyboard artist, which gives some really unique insights into anime and animation. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts. That's the number 4 Kids Flashback.
Let's Take This Outside now has a newsletter. Keep up to date with outdoor news, events, and great discount codes and deals from our partners. Sign up today at letstakethisoutside.ca.
You're the author of many, many books, including Top 70 Canoe Routes in Ontario. How many books have you released? Because I kind of lost count.
19 at this point, and I got to write one more because I don't want to die just 19. You have to have 20. You can't
die. Yeah.
Yeah. So the one book I'm working on right now is a children's book, actually, illustrated children's book. Yeah. About an uncle taking the kid out on a canoe trip, and the kid doesn't want to go out, and all the animal creatures are trying to help them deal with all the things around them.
That's very cool. When's it coming out?
That won't be out for another half a year, a year. Like, anybody there that wants to write a book, just remember it's the reason why there's not a lot of outdoor writers out there. It's not easy. It takes a long time, especially if you publish it. And the money you make, you don't make any money. If you want to work at the outdoors, remember this. You won't make any money. You'll be poor in the bank, but rich in spirit.
Speaking of authors, I think he's making enough money, I hope. You interviewed another guest of mine, like we talked about in the beginning, Adam Schultz, who is an amazing, amazing author, read several of his books. Is he like a legend in the canoeing world? Like, how does he stand in your world?
That's a really good question because I've never been asked that. I've known him for many years. And I got to say, in fact, I've never said this on any interview, but I'll tell you right now, he is a legend to very many people. He is to me. He's a really good writer. To me, he's our new Farley Mowat. He can really write. And The Canada in 10 Maps, one of his best books, probably his worst seller, but best books.
My dad said his favorite one was History of 10 Maps.
Yeah. It's just a really good book. And his one he did last year where he went out to try and find what evil spirit did whatever out there. And it's a really good scientific book, really good read. His latest one, you know, to paddle from Lake Erie to Northern Labrador, throw the mic down. Like, you know, you read that story and where he went, throw the mic down. But I can say I know some people out there, especially my age in the canoe world, that despise him. One person, when I did a whiskey chat with him, they said, "I'll never listen to your whiskey chats again. I can't believe you interviewed him."
Oh my gosh.
And so the question is, why? What's the problem? And, you know, they had this issue with this young guy doing these things as a young guy. That's only your problem? We're lucky we have young people going out there and doing this.
He is a modern day explorer, this man.
Yeah, well, that's the debate. So a lot of the negative was not, right? And all these other people did amazing things and he's getting all the attention. But I'm thinking, wait a minute. He didn't just paddle around Algonquin. He actually went from, you know, an amazing trip. So, and he writes really well. So I'm on his side and I asked him about the negativity and he gave me a good answer. He goes, "Why would I even listen to those people? I'm too busy paddling and writing."
I've interviewed Adam a couple times. I saw his chat at the Royal Canadian Geographical Society here in Ottawa. He's a lovely human being, great family man. It's funny because I went on a date once and this, like, I don't know why it came up. I was talking about my podcast and Adam Schultz, he mentioned he loved canoeing. And I brought up Adam on this date and this guy's like, "Oh, I think he takes too many risks and like, he's just dangerous." And I was like, and I immediately was like, I am not entertaining this date anymore.
Did you tell Adam that? You went out and you
No. No, the date has been since. No, I've never seen this guy again. But the date has been since I saw Adam. But the next time I talk to him, I'll have to tell him that his adventures ruined a man for me. But I think I'm glad I found out sooner rather than later, to be honest.
It's true. The one question I did ask him on the very first interview, his first book of all his books wasn't my favorite because he sort of left his canoe partner because the canoe partner couldn't keep up and stuff like that. And he also canoed an area where he said nobody had gone to, but the First Nations people had. And I asked him about that and he goes, and his answer was a really solid answer. He goes, "Kevin, I was 23 years old when I wrote the book. That's my answer."
Yeah, that's also really impressive that he wrote that at 23. On your YouTube channel, it's Casey Happy Camper. I'll make sure to put it up on my show notes. There is a plethora of resources. You have gear recommendations, adventures, outdoor shows, canoe trip planning. What are your favorite videos to put together?
I just like creating a story. My first thing is writing. I would say maybe it's not my best thing, but the one thing I really like doing is writing a story and telling a story. And then when it comes down to getting photos and getting video, whatever. So if you say what my favorite videos are, is when I tell a story in a video. Whether it's a short one with Gary the Puppet, or which is, he's just weird, or I go on a spring canoe trip with my buddies. There's always characters. There's always sort of a beginning and end. And I think, to me, that's why I watch stuff too on YouTube. I want a storyline. I want to sit there and listen to a storyline. Like we always did as a kid, right?
We kind of already talked about this, but say people want to get into canoeing or camping and it's a little intimidating. Where should they start? Should they be watching YouTube videos? Should they be going to their local outdoor store and being like, okay, should I get some gear? Like, where are you starting? What are some great resources to get into it?
Well, I think it's fantastic. We have YouTube now. A lot of people kind of make fun of that. I mean, remember last year, some unwise people, I would say, was really upset that the Toronto Outdoor Show, the majority of presenters were all YouTubers. And they called it a YouTube love fest. And they were very upset. I went, what, you want to go back to the days where we all sat in the basement and watched slideshows? And you would knock them. In fact, I remember when kayakers started joining outdoor canoe clubs, the Peterborough Canoe Club wouldn't allow kayakers to join their club back in the early 90s because they weren't canoeists.
So many gatekeepers there. What is happening?
It's terrible. Well, it's the world. Just look at the history, right? But at the same time, I think it was refreshing. They're all younger people. Did amazing trips too. Like the amazing solid trips they're doing. Really informative. But yeah, things are changing with that. I would say that, you know, you can get your information by YouTube. In fact, you know one of those tents you put up in the campground to use as a toilet? Have you ever tried to put them back in the bag?
No, I've never encountered this. No.
It's impossible. It's impossible. So I was visiting Christine the other day and we're taking care of her grandson. And of course, you know, he's 2 years old. He's a boy. And he's all active. So I put up the toilet tent in the living room for him to play in. She thought it was odd. And she goes, don't do that because I don't know how to put it back in the bag. I went, well, let's YouTube it. And we got it back in the bag.
Really? Oh, it worked.
Yeah. We would never have got it back in the bag if we didn't YouTube it. So YouTube is really good, but outdoor clubs are amazing as well because you can beg, steal, and borrow gear. I think a lot of people don't want to go into camping because it's expensive, especially winter camping. Going and buying one of those hot tents, you're looking at $1,500 plus a stove. Like, why would you do that for like one night in the woods, right? So joining a club, you can actually use that equipment, use the skills, use the people for them to go on a weekend trip together with, maybe meet some friends or a lover or whatever. I think that's really good too. Books are still the thing. I'm really surprised because as a writer, I'm really surprised my books still sell, to be quite honest, because there's so much information out there. My guidebooks sell really well. Why? I don't know, because the information is still out there on social media where these routes are. But I write a story as well. So what I'd love to do is the Happy Camper book. I show how to do things, but I show them how I messed up, right? So, you know, and then this is what I would do now. Yeah, so books are still a good thing. And blogs are still a big thing as well. Websites, maybe, maybe not, but there's so much more information. You think back 20 years ago, 30 years ago, when I started writing guidebooks, for me to get information from the government first before I even went anywhere, I had to write a letter with a stamp on it, mail the letter, and they would have to answer it. And I would return another letter and they would give me a pamphlet. That would take a month, 2 months before I'd even get a reply. Now, 2 seconds, you can get that information.
Absolutely. What gear do you always go back to personally for your adventures? What are some of your favorites? Maybe some brands that you love.
I would say that one of the biggest things people should know is spend more money on a tarp than a tent. A tent is your doghouse. That's where you sleep. You don't spend your time in there. You just go in there and sleep. And if you have a tarp, a good tarp, you get a fire going under the tarp. You get a tea going. You get a, you know, a whiskey going, whatever. You are part of your environment. You're thriving around your environment instead of escaping it. People that go in the tent during a rainstorm, they're escaping their environment. And if you do that for 10 days, you're going to go absolutely bonkers. But if you actually get a tarp up, when I guided, that was the first thing I did. I got a tarp up. I made everybody hors d'oeuvres, got them a drink. And then I started setting up camp. Then they were surrounded around themselves communicating as opposed to stuck in a little tiny cave. Another one that's a Canadian thing, if you ever go to the United States, or even I speak a lot outside of Canada, I learn a lot by doing that because I don't know anything what they do there. So I learn from them, but they also learn from me. They don't get the tump. So a tump is a thing you wear in your forehead to, you know, lessen the load on your pack. And it's what, you know, Voyageurs did, the First Nations did. There's still people around the world still using a tump. And I love it. But if you go to the United States, they will look at you and say, oh, you must be Canadian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. As soon as they see me, I go, why? Well, you're wearing a tump. I went, okay. And they're like, well, that's just silly. Why would you do that? I went, you be you. But I like the tump. But if you also go to other places like the UK, they actually don't have a lot of wilderness, but man, they could paddle a lot better than us. They're really good paddlers because they're very involved in becoming part of their canoe classes. So every weekend they're practicing their whitewater skills. When I go there, they're amazing paddlers, far better than any Canadian I know and any American, not even close, right? But when I was there last fall, the young guy was presenting before me and he was talking about how he was paddling down the One River Dee in, I think, Wales, and he didn't see anybody for 2 hours. He was very excited. He didn't see anybody for 2 hours. And then I got on and I started talking about the canoe routes I you know, you can do in Canada and how I didn't see anybody for like 32 days. And of course, they're like, what? What? So yeah, we're kind of blessed, to be quite honest.
We have a lot more space. We have a lot more space, to be fair.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, more skill, but less wilderness. I think typical Canadian thinks that they can canoe the moment they come out of the womb. And they're holding a paddle and a hockey stick.
Pretty much. Where is your dream trip? Is there something you haven't done yet that you really want to do?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asked a lot. I'll tell you my typical answer, then I'll even give you an answer. My typical answer is my next trip I'm going on. I don't know where it is. So, you know, that's what I really strive for. I don't want to go back in time all the time. I always want to progress and go somewhere different. And that's kind of a sappy answer, but it is the truth. What's really cool is my buddy Andy, because we turned 60, it's his turn to plan the trip. We've done this before on our birthdays. He's taking me on a 3-week trip this summer, but I have no clue where we're going.
Cool.
Drives me insane because I plan every trip, right? And then he goes, nope, not this time. And he's able to do this this year because 10 years ago, we did the Meanest Link, which is once around Algonquin, which was just a stupid trip, like 102 portages, 68 kilometers of portaging. And he hated it. And he goes, okay, when we turn 60, I'm taking on the trip. And you won't know where we're going. And I don't have a clue. So I like that sort of thing, even though it's driving me crazy. But some good places, Moisey River has always been on my list. It's Nahanni of the East. I've always wanted to do that. I've never wanted to do the Nahanni because I would love to do it, but it's because everybody wants to do it. I'm not the Everest type person. I don't want to do the Everest because everybody does Everest, right? I'd rather do a mountain that nobody knows about. I would love to paddle Saskatchewan more. That's an incredible province. I think people just forget about. I would love to paddle more in Quebec. There's so many places to paddle, but there's not a lot of guide information on it. And everybody asked me to write a guidebook on Quebec, but I think someone from Quebec should write that guidebook, not me.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, enough some kid from Ontario living near Toronto. That'd be wrong. Yeah. What about you? What are your dream trips?
Oh, you're asking me questions now.
I know. Sorry. Okay.
I was like caught off guard. I'm like, oh gosh. Dream trips. It's funny because like I think post pandemic or in pandemic, I like just fell back in love with Canada. You know, I go out west every year. My sister lives near Calgary. So I could go to Alberta and BC 1,000 more times and be happy. Upstate New York, I go, you know, once a season up to the Adirondacks. Like if I just went there for the rest of my life, I'd be totally happy. I just want to like be honest with that. But this June, I'm going to Newfoundland for the Travel Media Association of Canada's conference. And that has been a dream trip, is to do Newfoundland. That is on my list. And that is what's happening in a few months. And I'm very, very excited.
So. Oh, you should be excited. That's an amazing place to go. And it's true. The people are incredible. They are incredible. I filmed there quite a few times. But I remember the one we were having someone show up. They were like fake boating people to show us fishing, right? And they were like part of their script. And they didn't show up. So I walked up to these two guys in the dock. I'm like, hey, can you take us out in the boat and catch some cod with us on camera? Sure.
Awesome.
And the so scene cool. was amazing. And the guy was playing the fiddle while we're fishing.
Oh, my and gosh. Perfect.
In fact, what we were scripting was boring. So these guys made it all real. And I still keep in touch with those guys. And that was probably 20 years ago when I did that. But yeah. So you'll love that area. You'll love the landscape. It's very rugged, and also it's molded the people who they are. because they are island people.
I'm really looking forward to it. And in terms of like international, I think I really want to do like the circuits in Patagonia. That's like in the future. But at the moment, I'm just very happy exploring locally and just moving my body and getting outside and getting vitamin D. And yeah, I have a really wonderful life. And I'm always thrown off guard when people ask me questions. Kevin, you have a YouTube channel. You have almost 20 books. You have so many resources that you've put into the world. Thank you. I'm going to post them all on the show notes. Is there anything else that you would want to share before we end the interview? Or
just one thing that I think is really important that I've learned throughout my career is that it's really neat to do the familiar. I get it. I love going to places I've gone to before. In fact, when I paddled the Old Thames River in southwestern Ontario, people kind of made fun of that, but it was a hilarious trip. I loved it. I would do that in a heartbeat again.
That's like my hometown. Yeah, Thames River. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember as a kid paddling that river. So I went from the tributaries all the way to the end, 10 days, and found interesting places to camp because it's not really wilderness. I stayed in a very fancy resort once and actually put my tent on the bed and slept in it. That was hilarious. I loved it. But the other thing is to go to somewhere you have no clue about. I think that's really important for everybody to do. When I paddled the Spey River, I actually got paid to go down the River Spey in Scotland and stop at whiskey distilleries. I got paid for that job. It was a great, it was hell. It was hell. But what I loved about it was I had no clue about the history. I had no clue about the species. I went to get a fire going. I had no clue what wood I was using. And I kind of liked that. I kind of like to break away. So yes, I really love doing the familiar. And sometimes we get caught up in that. We don't want to break away from that. But it's important in your life to actually break away from that and try to light a fire with wood you don't know what it is.
I love, love, love that advice. Kevin Callan, thank you so much for joining me. The Happy Camper. This has been super fun. I appreciate it.
Thanks. And I'll thank my dog. Well, she's licking her paws again.
Thanks, Angel.
Thanks for listening. For more Let's Take This Outside, go to letstakethisoutside.ca.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com and listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.
Produced and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.